Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Happy September. I hope everybody's having a good Labor Day this week, or this weekend, I should say. On today's show, we have a very special interview with one of the best bodybuilders, one of the legends of the sport, Lee Labrada, who was one of the best bodybuilders of the 1980s and 1990s. And Lee achieved second place runner-up finish to Lee Haney twice in 1989 and 1990. And he presented one of the most symmetrical and perfect physiques in the bodybuilding world. And also, he displayed it with incredible posing. So it was really an honor to have Lee Labrada on the show. I've been meaning to talk to him for a while. So I was glad we got to do that interview. And in this interview, we're going to talk about Lee's complete bodybuilding career from when he started competing as a teenager all the way up till he won the Nationals in 1985 as a middleweight. And then he went on to the Mr. Universe a week or two later and won the Mr. Universe as a middleweight. And then he started his pro career in 1986, winning the Night of the Champions contest. And then he started competing in the Mr. Olympia in 1987, and he competed from 1987 all the way up until 1993, and he never took lower than fourth place. And as I mentioned, he took a couple second places to Lee Haney in 1989 and 1990, and he also was second to Flex Wheeler at the 1993 Arnold Classic. So Lee had an incredible career, and he really left his stamp on the sport with his incredible posing and his very symmetrical physique. He was really competing at a middleweight physique, 176 to maybe 190 pounds at his biggest. So it's really amazing what Lee accomplished at that height and that weight, and was able to rise to the top of the sport and be one of the top bodybuilders in the world. All right, I want to mention also that we are brought to you by Old School Labs. Now, I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is a supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is gearing up for a defense of the Classic Physique Olympia in only a couple more weeks. And Breon was also this year's 2018 Classic Physique Arnold Classic champion. They also sponsor 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So go to oldschoollabs.com and use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order at oldschoollabs.com, or you can go to amazon.com and place your order there. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, speaking of Old School Labs, I got some great news this week. I am going to the Olympia in a couple of weeks, so I will be out in Las Vegas. I will be arriving on September 13th that night, and then I will be at the expo on the 14th and 15th, and then I'll be leaving on that Sunday. So if you guys are at the expo at the Olympia, please stop by and say hello to me. I'll be at the Old School Labs booth. I would love to meet you guys and talk to you, talk to anybody who listens to the show. That would be great. Also, in addition to the Lee Labrada interview that we have today on the podcast, I originally did the Lee Labrada interview as part of my video series. You can check out all the videos at bodybuildinglegendshow.com. And Lee's interview ended up being so long because we had so many clips from so many of the contests he went in that it ends up being a three-part series. So we've got part two of that series up right now. So if you go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com, or you can go to my YouTube channel under John Hansen, you will see part two of the Lee Labrada interview. And in part two of the interview, we talked to Lee about the 1989 and 1990 Mr. Olympia as well as the 1991 Mr. Olympia. So we got a lot of great video footage on there if you want to watch that in addition to listening to the podcast today. Also, in celebration of me going to the Olympia this year, I am going to offer a book sale. As you know, I have three books available on Amazon.com right now. One is called Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1, where I cover all the competitions from the 1970s. I also have the MP6 Workout, which is the workout program that I use right till to this day, and it's a great program for getting bigger. MP means mass and power, so it's kind of a periodization where you're using cycle training, and you're training first for power for a six-week cycle, and then you switch gears and you choose the same routine, and you train for mass using slightly different weights, but you'll be stronger because you've developed your strength on the power program. So it's called the MP6 Workout. I'm offering that one. And then also my latest book, which is called Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, where I cover all the natural bodybuilding competitions I entered from 1991 to 1998, including all the diets I followed, the training I followed, how everything worked out, the pre-contest program I followed. And then I talk about, did it work or did it not work for that contest I was training for and what I learned from it. So all three of those books, if you bought them on Amazon, it would probably cost you $70 or $80. I'm offering them all three, for only $50 for the next month, for the month of September. So if you just want to send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and in the subject, just put book sale, I'll send you the information on how to purchase all three books for only $50. And again, this offer only lasts for this month, in the month of September. So if you haven't bought the books, or you want to buy them, or if you want to buy them for Christmas, maybe, you know, upcoming Christmas present, just send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I had a follow-up email from Michael. Michael wrote to me about a week ago asking what he should do for his training, because he said he was a 21-year-old, 6'6", 260 pounds, and he said he was mostly fat. So I wrote Michael back and I told him to purchase my book, Natural Bodybuilding, which is available from Human Kinetics Publishing. It's still available on Amazon.com, or you could buy it from me. I've got a few copies left. It is actually out of print now. It was published in 2005, but I have a lot of routines in there, including a beginner and intermediate routine. So I thought that would be good for Michael to get started. And he wrote me back and he said, "Mr. Hansen, thank you very much for the reply. I did as you advised and I ordered your book, Natural Bodybuilding. After reading through it, I got started on the 3 times per week beginner workout with some added cardio, along with starting to track my calories. I did have one question, though. You lay out quite a few workout splits in your book. How are they meant to be followed? Once I finish 6 to 12 months on the full body workout, do I just start cycling through the more advanced program, switching every time I plateau?" Yeah, that's a great question. I would say, just as you mentioned, I would follow the beginner program for at least 6 months. Usually after 6 months, you could probably advance into the intermediate program, which for that I would advise training each muscle group twice a week and training 4 days a week total. So like a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday program. And I would train half your body on Monday and Thursday, and then the other half on Tuesday and Friday. So what I used to do when I was around 20, 21 years old and I was trying to get bigger and I was using this program, I would split it up into the push-pull system. So the pushing muscles would be chest, shoulders, triceps, and also I would throw in calves. I would do that on Monday and Wednesday. And then on Tuesday and Friday, I would do the pulling muscles, which is back and biceps, forearms, and I would also throw in legs. So I would do legs, back, and biceps and forearms all in one day. And I would do that on Tuesday and Friday. And I used that program for a couple of years when I was about Michael's age, when I was like 20, 21 years old. And it was really, really effective for building up mass and just using all the basic movements. I built up my strength a lot. And I went from, I think, 200 pounds to 230 pounds in that 2-year period. And that really laid the foundation for my physique for the next 20 years to go. Once I bulked up and I built that mass, I was always able to get back to that weight easily, where before that, my metabolism was so fast, I could never gain any size. But after going through that bulk up phase and I got up to 230 pounds, that laid the foundation, as I said, and I always had that mass. And I was just able to build on that and then, of course, refine it as well for competitions. And I know Michael's trying to get leaner. So he would follow the diet, as I mentioned, and also really be careful with doing the cardio and stuff like that to get leaner. All right, then I got an email from Scott Barron, who's one of our big listeners of the show. And Scott is also a Patreon donor. And Scott says, hey, John, I just saw the Eddie Robinson. It hurt himself pretty bad, I guess. I think there's a GoFundMe page. I need to get on and donate. I thought I'd throw it out there to mention on your podcast, maybe replay his interview or something. Just a thought. As always, keep up the great work. Loving the Cormier replay. Yes, for those of you that didn't hear, bodybuilding legend Eddie Robinson, who was the 1989 NPC USA champion, and he also had a pretty good career as a pro bodybuilder, including the 1990 Olympia he competed in, and then he went over to the WBF, the Vince McMahon organization. But Eddie had a freak accident at the gym. I think Eddie's about 53 years old. I think he's a couple of years younger than me. And I know he was training to compete in the NABBA Universe in the Masters division, because I did an interview with Eddie last year at his gym out in Clearwater, and he mentioned that he was going to get ready for that NABBA Universe competition. And then I saw on Facebook his son was with him, and he was in the hospital, and he said he had a freak accident. So I didn't know what happened. I didn't know if he hurt himself squatting or deadlifting, because Eddie's still a big, strong guy, and he still trains really heavy. But it was just a freak accident where he tripped in the gym, and his head hit the wall, and he ended up herniating, or even worse, a couple of the discs in his neck, and he lost feeling in his legs and his arms. So they had to rush him to the hospital. They had to do emergency surgery right away. And now Eddie is faced with going through all the rehab and trying to get his feeling back in his arms and his fingers and everything. And he's going through a lot of nerve pain. So as Scott said, I guess there is a GoFundMe page. If I find the link for that, I'll put it up. Maybe I'll send it out on an email, or I'll mention it on next week's podcast. What a freak accident. I've tried to stay in touch with Eddie a little bit, emailing him on Facebook and seeing how he's doing. And I guess the surgery was successful, but now he's got that long rehab, which will probably take up to a year. Wow, it's just amazing how things can change so quickly in the blink of an eye. That's life, I guess, you know. But we wish Eddie the best. I know he's got a really strong spirit and strong heart, and he's very mentally strong as well. So I'm sure he will get through it, but I don't envy all the pain and the work that he's got ahead of him. Probably over the next year. All right, I want to mention another email I got from Alex Gerbikoff. Alex, I've known many, many years now because I did a seminar at MTU, Michigan Tech University, and God, it's got to be over 10 years ago. I think it was around 2005, maybe 2006. And Alex was at that seminar, and he's been staying in touch with me ever since. And he sent me this email, and he said, hi, John, I hope you had a great summer. I did read your new book, Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, this spring, and I loved it. As with everything you do, it was very inspiring. I'm 44 years old now, and I'm still sticking to it. Also, I'm starting to dig into this grant, which I was going to advertise as an area-wide presentation for all students and parents in our area and neighboring high schools. We could do it in my high school's auditorium. Alex wants to bring me out and do a seminar like I did at MTU about 12 years ago. My wife won this grant a few years ago. She'll be helping me to put it all together, and my oldest daughter is on the board of approvals. I would love to make this happen. It would be a great event for our area, bringing in someone like you, and you deserve an absolutely huge audience for what you have to offer. I am still driven to make this an amazing experience for both you and this area. So that was great to hear, and I told Alex that I would, I'm totally on board, and I would love to come out there again and be a part of that. So whenever that gets going, I will hopefully be back at Michigan Tech University or in that area. That was in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. That was a beautiful area. I got an email about the interview I did with Roy Callender, and Roy mentions writing a book, and Luke Chase said you two should collaborate on that book. I got an email from Mindy O'Brien this week. Mindy, for those of you that don't know, is a top pro fitness competitor, and this is in regards to the movie Bigger, which is coming up for its premiere on October 12th. The movie Bigger, which is the biopic about Joe and Ben Weider's life, and if you remember, I went out there last year, last fall. I went to Birmingham, Alabama for a day or two just to see them filming it. I got to see the part where they were filming the 1970 Mr. Olympia, where Arnold beat Sergio for the first time, and Joe and Ben Weider, of course, were the promoters of the show. So that movie is now ready finally to be released, and it's going to be released on October 12th. But I got a letter from Mindy O'Brien, and she said, "Hello, John, my name is Mindy O'Brien, and I've been an IFBB for over 14 years. I'm working with producer Steve Lee Jones, who was bold enough to take on and then create a star-driven Hollywood film about our passion, bodybuilding and fitness. The movie, which I'm sure you've already heard about already, is called Bigger, and it's the inspirational tale of the iconic father of fitness, Joe Weider, and his brother Ben, battling anti-Semitism as well as extreme poverty. The brothers beat all odds to build an empire and inspire future generations. On Thursday, September 13th, immediately following the Olympia press conference at the Orleans Arena, there will be a red carpet event featuring many of the Bigger cast members, including Julianne Hough, who plays Betty Weider, Tyler Hoechlin, who plays Joe Weider, Kevin Durand, Max Martini, Steve Guttenberg, Callum Van Moger, who plays Arnold, Steve Cook, and of course, director George Gallo and producer Steve Lee Jones. Aside from a brief interview and photo ops on the red carpet, there will also be a limited number of one-on-one interviews available with members of the cast as well as with the director and the producer. So Mindy was emailing me to see if I wanted to do any interviews, which I would have loved to have done, but unfortunately, I won't get into Vegas until later that night, so I will unfortunately miss the premiere of Bigger, but I will definitely catch it when it comes out to all the theaters on October 12th. All right, so that was my emails for the week. Thank you guys for sending those out. And I also want to mention, before we get to our interview with Lee Labrada, we are brought to you also by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So you can call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida at 813-922-8939, or you can go online and reach them at their website, flalternativemeds.com. And if you mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, they will give you a free consultation, no money at all, and they will also give you 20% off your order if you order anything. So check them out. All right, so that is it for our opening. I hope you guys really enjoy this interview with one of the true legends of the sport, Lee Labrada. Here you go. All right, welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a very special guest this week. He's a legend in the sport, one of the best pro bodybuilders in the 1980s and 90s, and also one of the best posers. He presented his physique in such an artistic and dramatic fashion. I think it's one of the best in the history of the sport. So, Lee, it's a real honor to have you on the show.
It's great to be here, John. Thank you.
All right. Well, first of all, before we get started on your career, Lee, I want to say congratulations to your son, Hunter, who just won the Junior USA, and he's going for his pro card this year.
That's right. He just won the Junior USAs, and he's going to be competing in Miami in November at the NPC Nationals, and I think he's got a very good shot.
I do, too. He's got a great physique. You got to be really proud of him.
Thank you. I am.
Well, Lee, let's start with your career at the very beginning. I know you started bodybuilding at a young age. What got you into bodybuilding, and when did you start lifting weights?
So I started when I was 17 years old in order to gain weight for football. Okay. And I found out very quickly that I was a better bodybuilder than a football player at 5'6 and 135 pounds dripping wet. And it wasn't very long after that that I entered my first competition, which was put on by the AAU, the Amateur Athletic Union. Back in the day, it was the AAU Teenage Mr. Jacksonville, Florida. And, you know, much to my surprise, I won the show. And I say much to my surprise because everybody was bigger than I was, a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I thought that bodybuilding was just about being the biggest guy. You know, so it was a great success early on. And I learned a very important lesson that followed me through my career, you know, which is to say that quality matters just as much as quantity.
Yeah. Now, Lee, you were born in Cuba, right? So you moved to the United States at what age?
That's right. I moved to the United States at 2 years 2 years old with my grandmother.
Okay. And you moved to Florida first?
No, actually, we moved to Chicago, Illinois. We were then joined by my mother and father there. Okay. And I lived there until I was about 10 years old, and at that time I moved to Florida. Okay. And as a teenager in Florida, that's when I became interested in bodybuilding.
Okay. Now, I know Mike Mentzer was one of your inspirations when you started, correct?
That's right. Yeah, Mike Mentzer was one of my early influences. I think that what I was attracted to was Mike had a propensity for breaking things down very scientifically, and I really liked that type of approach. You know, my background is in engineering, and that's just the type of mind that I have. You know, I'm very analytical about things, and so I really liked the way that he broke down the training system.
Okay, gotcha. So you were using the heavy duty type of training then, right, when you started?
It was a modified heavy duty. Essentially what I did is I would go into the gym, and as soon as I warmed up, I would try to increase my training poundages as quickly as I could. And then I would go to failure on each set. Okay. And then with each succeeding set, I would strip off about 10% of the weight. You know, and the whole idea was just to get the muscle as tired as possible, as fast as possible.
Okay, gotcha. So what was your next show then after that first show you did in Jacksonville?
So my next show wasn't until 4 years later, at this time I was in college, and I was in Houston, Texas at the time, because my father had relocated the family, and so I entered the 1982 Junior Gulf Coast Championships and the Collegiate Texas Championships. This time they were put on by the NPC, and I won both.
Okay.
Of those shows. So that was my next foray. By that time, I had put on an additional 40 pounds of muscle.
Wow.
And I weighed about 175 pounds at that time.
Okay. So were your gains pretty quickly? I mean, as you said that was 4 years. Was it like about 10 pounds, 8 pounds a year or something like that?
It was about 8 or 10 pounds a year during that four-year period from the time I was 18 until I was 22.
Okay. Yeah. Did you go to college also in Chicago?
I did. I started straight out of high school. I went to Northwestern University, mm-hmm. and I went into the engineering program there. And I did 2 years at Northwestern. And at that time, my father relocated the family to Houston, Texas, and I followed. And I finished my degree at University of Houston.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So you were thinking ahead back then that you were going to get a degree in engineering. You weren't like a lot of bodybuilders who think they're going to win these titles and spend their career as a bodybuilder.
No, John, I'll tell you, it was the farthest thing from my mind. You know, I thought that I was going to be an engineer for the rest of my life, and I was just going to do bodybuilding as a hobby. And mm-hmm. as it turned out, I was a lot better at it than I thought initially. You know, I still remember the first time that I competed here in Texas, and I walked out on stage, and literally the judges were dropping their pencils and, like, going like this, you know, just looking at me. And I thought that I had done something wrong. You know, I thought that maybe I had dropped my number or my tan was, not allowed the way I did it or whatever. And then as soon as I filed off backstage, the entire judging panel came running back there.
Really?
And like, what's your name? Where do you come from? And, you know, it's like, yeah, it just really caught me off guard. I didn't know what my potential was.
Really? Wow. So when you looked at your physique, you didn't see how really good you were then, huh?
You know, I felt that I was good, but I didn't know that I had the potential to go as far as I did.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, I've always been very pragmatic about that. Mm-hmm. You know, and in assessing my odds, and you know, I'm probably my worst critic. You know, in terms of analyzing myself, I was always very objective. You know, and I always would ask the judges for input. You know, how can I improve? What things do I need to work on? And, you know, I always honed in on the weak points and tried to bring those up.
So this was at the beginning of the NPC when they started, Lee. Were you looking at what it would take for you to get to be a pro? I mean, was that where your mindset was? Were you looking at the different contests? And
Well, I'll tell you, once I entered those first NPC shows, and I won the first series of shows, and then in 83 I won the Mr. Texas. Okay. It's at that point that I started toying with the idea, you know, maybe I have what it takes to compete at the national level, and if I win at the national level, I might become a pro.
Yeah.
So that was my mindset there at 23 years of age, 24 years of age, in 1984, I competed in the USA Championships for the first time, and I took second place behind Bill Williams, despite the fact that that I had missed the cutoff for the middleweight class by 1 pound.
Right.
I was given away a 20-pound advantage, yet I came in second in the class.
Yeah.
And then that's when I thought, you know, I think I got a shot at this.
Yeah. I talked to Phil. I did an interview with him, and I asked him about that contest. And he said he was training in California, I think, at the time, and Mike Christian was a friend of his, and they all went to the USA together. And he was looking at you backstage thinking, wow, this guy's good. So then Mike Christian came back to him afterwards, and he goes, well, how close is that guy to me? And Mike goes, it's real close. So that was
he was a great bodybuilder, Phil Williams.
Yeah. Yeah, that was amazing. You were able to take second in the light heavyweights, being like almost a middleweight, really.
Yep. And I learned from every outing I learned, and I missed that peak because I overcarbed.
Oh, really? Yeah. I've done that too, where you drink too much water when you're carving, and then you end up holding.
Oh, yeah. It's a learning process, and arguably the most difficult part of being a competitive bodybuilder is the last week, and even the last 48 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and just it's mind-boggling to me how many young bodybuilders, you know, just basically check all the boxes. They train hard, they eat meticulously, and they do everything right. And then the last 2 days before the show, they change everything up.
Yeah.
You know, and they start eating all sorts of strange foods and cutting water and doing this and that. And to me, that's like flying in an airplane and coming in for a landing and waiting until you're like 10 feet off the runway and then just nosediving into it.
Right,
you know?
Right,
I mean, why change anything? You're on that path coming in steady.
Right.
You know, just continue what you're doing right through the show.
Right.
That's what I always tell them.
Yeah. So you did the MPC Nationals that year also, right? And you took fifth then as a middleweight.
Well, and I didn't know at the time, John. And, you know, and I'm going to use this one as a teaching moment for the youngsters that are tuning in, you know, because they only awarded trophies through fourth place.
Oh, really?
So I went home, or I should say I went back to the hotel from that show. The NBC Nationals were in New Orleans that year. I never forget going back to the hotel. And I literally closed the door, and I just lay flat on my back on the floor looking up at the ceiling, and I literally contemplated quitting. I said, you know, I'm not cut off for this. This is not for me. And, you know, but, you know, I think God works in strange ways, you know, and placed it on my heart, and I just kept going. And because I kept going at that point, you know, I came back the following year and I won the Nationals. So it's just to show you, you know, sometimes you're that close, you know, and you just can't quit.
So they only gave trophies to fourth. So when the contest was over, you didn't know where you placed.
I thought I hadn't placed at all.
Wow.
You know, it's pretty humbling. And, you know, and I felt very dejected that night.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was called by a judge from New Orleans, and he told me afterwards, hey, listen, you and the gentleman that came in fourth, you know, were neck and neck, you know, and so I was okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a tough class. John Natashek won, and John Arnito was second. So those were some great bodybuilders, yeah.
Yep, that's right.
Now, in 85, Lee, that was the big year for you. You were 25 years old, and you won your class at the Nationals in the Universe. Did you also do a couples posing? I thought I remembered seeing that. Like, it was a professional pro-am couples?
Yes. Yeah. I did a pro-am with Dinah Anderson.
Right,
A dear friend, very nice lady, great physique. And we did a pro-am, and that was actually held in Toronto, Canada, in 1984. And I went up there with her, and I was an amateur at the time, and she was a women's pro.
Yeah.
And we took fourth, I believe, if memory serves me right. And that's the first time I met Bob Kennedy, who the publisher of Muscle Mag magazine, who became a great friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
That was another instance in which somebody came running backstage. He literally came running backstage after seeing me at the prejudging and just cornered me. And he goes, "My boy, you're going places." You know, so it was encouraging.
Yeah,
well, I always thought great guy Bob Kennedy.
Yeah, he was great. I miss him. Yeah, I always thought that was a great move because that was a pro-am contest. So you were on. I think it was on TV, if I'm not mistaken. And you were up there with the pros, and it was a great chance for you to showcase your physique, you know?
Sure, absolutely. That exposure never hurts.
Yeah. So we go into 85 then, and what was your training like for that year, Lee? Because, I mean, I know you took fifth the year before. Did you really have that mindset that this was going to be your year, this was it for you?
I had the hope that I would win my class at the Nationals and gain the ticket to the IFBB Mr. Universe. See, back in the day, back in that time, if you won your class at the NPC Nationals, you didn't get a pro card.
Right.
If you won the overall at the NPC Nationals, you did not get your pro card.
Right.
You basically had an opportunity to go compete in the IFBB Amateur World Bodybuilding Championships, a.k.a. the IFBB Mr. Universe.
Right.
If you won there, then you got your pro card.
Yeah.
So they were only given literally four or five pro cards a year back in 1985. It was very difficult to get a pro card. And so that was my goal at that point, because I knew at that point then I'd be able to compete as a professional bodybuilder and make my living that way.
Yeah, yeah, there were some great bodybuilders in the 1980s who won their class at the Nationals and went to the Universe and didn't win, and they ended up not turning pro.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So, Lee, let me talk a little bit about your posing. Were you a really good – I saw the tape from when you won the Universe in Sweden in 85, and you were an awesome poser there. So you had to be working on your posing then, back then, right?
I always thought that posing and presentation – was very important. I still feel that it's very important. In fact, we just finished a posing clinic that we did here at Labrada Nutrition this weekend, and we had over 100 attendees, and I was hands-on with all of these guys, and a lot of them are classic bodybuilders now, and just something that I like to do to give back to the community. You know, but I always thought that posing was really, really important, and I tell these young guys, you know, that you work so hard in the gym and you work so hard dieting, but why on earth would you shortchange your chances of getting a higher placing by not working on your posing? Your posing is your opportunity to show the results off to the judges.
Yeah.
So the better you can show those results, the better a poser you are, the better your chances of winning. If it becomes very close between you and another guy, you know, whether you're just a couple of points apart, that can make all the difference.
Yeah.
So I've always thought it was important to be a great poser. You know, I studied all the great posers of that time, like Muhammad Macaway and Ed Corney. And also I had a lot of experience in my background. When I was a child, I took a lot of martial arts. And doing katas and that type of thing really helped me to learn to move and to glide and to just move in a coordinated fashion.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. I was going to ask you who your inspirations was, because like you said, coming from the 70s, you had Corney, who was the best. And then you had McAway, who almost like took it to another level the way he presented his physique.
Absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely, yeah. One of the guys that I think that the bodybuilders of today could study and learn a lot from.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm surprised how many younger bodybuilders don't know of him. And then
I think it's because there's very little contest footage of him except for a few Olympias.
Yeah.
You know? So it makes it a little bit harder and more obscure to find, but if they can find it, it's worth watching.
Yeah.
And so what I would do is I would literally grab some of these old Olympia tapes, and I would run through these guys' posing routines, and just be able to experience what that style of posing was, different guys, and then I just came up with my own style.
So you created your routine based on which poses you look good at, which was good for your physique.
Absolutely, and the fact that that the transitions are just as important as the actual static poses.
Right.
So being a transition is a dynamic pose. You're posing the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a static pose like front double bicep, you know, or a lat spread, but in between is a transition, and a transition is a dynamic or a moving pose.
Yeah.
And so that has to be just as beautiful and just as coordinated as the static poses.
Yeah. So tell me about that NPC Nationals when you won. How did that feel, winning the middleweight class and getting a chance to go to the Universe?
Well, I'll never forget Jim Mannion coming up to me after the prejudging and asking me if I had a passport. And I said, yes, sir. And I knew that was code for, you know, you're in contention here, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to make sure that you got a passport in case you need to go overseas and compete in the Mr. Universe. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me about the Universe. I remember reading an article, and this was before 9/11 and stuff, when the airports weren't as, you know, secure. And I remember you said you brought all your water in a suitcase, right? And
I did. I was very meticulous about my preparation, and maybe I was overdoing it at the time. But, you know, that was the first time I'd ever been to Europe, and yeah. I wasn't going to run the risk of having to drink tap water. And so I literally packed a suitcase with 8 gallons of water in it. You know, something you couldn't do nowadays with all of the 9/11 stuff.
Right.
You know, back in the day, yeah, I had a suitcase loaded full of water. I had another suitcase full of frozen chicken breasts and, and all of the meals packed and partitioned and just, I mean, ready to eat, you know.
Right. And didn't the water explode, Lee, when you got there?
I busted a couple of those open, you know, but I learned as soon as I got there that, yep, they got low sodium water there too.
And another thing I remember reading, you said you were adjusting your time clock, so you were starting to get up at the same time as Sweden time, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, being on an airplane is one thing, you know, because that high altitude tends to make you leak. Your cells leak, and you get subcutaneous fluid, you know, water retention, we call it. But the other piece of it is that jet lag can really have an impact on a physique, and it can have an impact on a physique for days, you know, because your cortisol levels are all jacked up, you know, and your body's discombobulated. So basically what I would do is I would start adjusting my time by an hour every night leading up to the show. So by the time that the show came around, if I was going to Europe, it's a 7-hour time difference for us from here, Texas. Mm-hmm. And so I would be getting up at 3 a.m, you know, which is 7 hours later. It's like 10 in the morning in Germany or wherever it was that I was going to compete.
Yeah.
And so I would get up and I'd be in the gym by 4 a.m. in training. And so, the gym owner, Mark Costa, would give me a key to the gym, and I literally would let myself in. I was the only one there. It was pitch black.
Yeah, you know, wow.
I would train, and I would just get my schedule adjusted that way.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It shows you how meticulous you were for the preparation of it, you know?
You know, John, I felt that I always had to be meticulous in the preparation because I wasn't going to beat these guys on size.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that I tell my son as well, you know, even though he's a super heavyweight. You know, don't play the size game. You know, you need a certain amount of size, but if you pay attention to the details and you make sure that you're the guy that has the most muscle quality, most defined, you have the best posing, the best poise, the best package, that's what wins shows.
Yeah. How was it competing in the universe? Because this was your first time competing on an international level.
You know, it was. I mean, I was just elated to stand on the stage, and that's the first time that I met Joe Weider and Ben Weider, and so that was the icing on the cake. You know, because up until that point, you got to understand this is early '80s before the internet. You know, The only time I'd ever seen these guys were in magazines.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, here was the kingmaker. You know, Joe Weider, and so I remember getting my picture taken with him backstage, and I think that was as much of a highlight as winning the show. You know, afterwards I had the judges come up to me and tell me that if they had, I had a perfect score, and they told me that if there had been an overall winner pick, I would have won the overall.
Wow, that'd make you feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember it was on ESPN that year, and Chris Dickerson was the commentator, and when you came out and started your routine, he said, "This is one of the best physiques I've ever seen."
It's an amazing compliment from an amazing man who has one of the most amazing physiques I've ever seen. You know, I've got a Chris Dickerson story for you. I remember back in the day, my wife and I were living in Marina Del Rey, and we invited Chris over for dinner. Mm-hmm. And I was getting ready for the Mr. Olympia in Los Angeles, and I was belly aching to Chris about just how tired I was of all this dieting and this and that. And he just put his hand on my shoulder and he goes, "Lee." He goes, "Once a bodybuilder, always a bodybuilder. Mark my words." And he was right.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great guy. I've done several interviews with him. All right, so you win the universe in 85, and now you turn pro. So you decide to do the 1986 Night of the Champions. And at the time, this was before the Arnold Classic, the Night of the Champions was the biggest pro contest beside the Mr. Olympia.
Yep.
So you go into that show, and what were your feelings going into that, Lee? Did you think you had a good shot?
Oh, my gosh. You know, lions and tigers and elephants, oh, my. It's the trip to the zoo.
Yeah.
I didn't think I had an Ice Cube's chance in hell.
Really?
Of playing or even winning when we went backstage. Listen, there's an enormous difference. Anybody that's ever been backstage at a pro show knows that these guys have something special. genetically they are different than the majority of bodybuilders and the majority of the population for that.
Yeah.
You know, they have bigger bone structures, they have wider shoulder structures, bigger clavicles, smaller waists. Well, at least they used to have smaller waists, and you know, and the like. And so when I got back there, and everybody started taking off their warm ups, it was pretty humbling.
Yeah.
You know, here was alongside some of the bodybuilders that I had read about in the magazines. Tennis. And I was going to be standing next to those guys.
Yeah.
So I did not know. It was uncharted water. You know, and I've always been pragmatic. And I've always tried to be humble about it. You know, I was just testing the waters, and where the chips fall, that's where they fall. And that's my starting point.
Yeah.
But I won the show.
Yeah, yeah. Ron Love was second, so.
Yep.
That was the guy who was also in the Nationals with you. He won the heavyweights at the Nationals, yeah.
And Barry DeMay was one of the top finishers as well.
Yeah, I remember that. That was
great to see, yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of controversial because I think Barry took sixth, and then I guess the audience was booing. I wasn't there, but that's what I read in the magazines.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, it was a pretty competitive show, absolutely.
Yeah. You and Barry did, like, a photo shoot in Hawaii or something after that. Weren't you in the Muscle Mag or something?
In 1986. Yeah, we flew out there, we guest posed.
Yeah.
Miss Kawashima's Hawaiian show there, NPC show.
Right.
And so we did a photo shoot while we were out there as well.
Yeah.
Great times.
Yeah.
And then I was married 2 weeks later.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, married 2 weeks later to Robin. And I'm happy to say that tomorrow is our 32nd wedding anniversary.
Wow.
And she still loves me.
Congratulations. That's great, Lee. That's great. Another thing I want to mention, Lee, is I think I mentioned to this before when we did an interview a long time ago, was you said when you turned professional, you were going to be a pro for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you stuck to that prediction. You stuck to your guns on that.
I did. I've always been a planner, and I told Robin when we got married, I was 26 at the time, I'm going to do this for 10 years, and then I'm done. You know, I'm going to go as far as I can in 10 years. If I haven't done it in 10 years, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, I won a lot of pro competitions, placed in the Mr. Olympia in the top 4 or 7 consecutive times. I never had lower than a fourth place finish in the Mr. Olympia. And when it came time, you know, I just felt like I had outgrown the sport, and the sport had outgrown me. I was ready to move on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what impressed me too, Lee, was not just that you said it at the beginning, but you stuck to it at the end of the 10 years, because we see so many bodybuilders who they don't quit. They just keep going. Even when their placings start to go down and their physique starts to decline, they still come back, and you stuck with it and never came back.
Well, and I wanted the people to remember me in my prime.
Yeah.
You know, rather than remember me falling off and placing lower and lower and lower in competitions.
Yeah, exactly. So the Mr. Olympia that year you didn't do. That was in Columbus, Ohio. And what was the reason you stayed out of it that year?
I thought that I needed yet another year to make improvements in my physique before I was ready to step on the Olympic stage.
Okay.
So then the first time was in 1987 in Gothenburg, Sweden.
Yeah.
And I ended up taking third place in my first Olympia.
Yeah, which was amazing. And before that, you did the Pro Mr. World, and I think Ron Love was the winner there, and you got second
place.
Right.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that was the Pro World Championships in Essen. That was the qualifier.
Yeah. Now, how did you feel after taking second? Did you feel like you weren't at your best there, and you knew it would be a different story at the Olympia?
You know what? Ron has a great physique.
Yeah.
He deserved to win that day. Mm-hmm. I was definitely off. I had water retention, but it was a good learning lesson because I was able to figure out a way to correct that by the time the Mr. Olympia came later in the year.
Okay. And that was in Germany, you said, right, Lee?
The Mr. Olympia was in Sweden that year, the 1987 Mr. Olympia.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So what were your feelings going into that? Now you're going up against Lee Haney, who had won it several times, and Gaspari had taken second the year before. So you're going up against some real mass monsters. And Mike Christian, I think that was his first Olympia, or second Olympia.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, it was taking it to another level again. And so I didn't know how I would fare. But I tell you what, I was just delighted that I was stepping on the Mr. Olympia stage.
Yeah.
Few mortals that get to actually step on a Mr. Olympia stage.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was something very special. I was stepping onto the stage where I had seen all of my childhood heroes you know, the Larry Scotts, the Sergio Olivas, the Arnold Schwarzeneggers, the Frank Zanes, and, you know, and so here I was, you know, and I stepped out onto the Olympia stage and went through my pose routine, and there's a million flashbulbs going off. yes, there were flashbulbs back then.
Yeah,
right. Those were film cameras.
Right, right.
Imagine that. So it was like being in front of 1,000 strobes, and boy, it just I knew I was someplace special.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. It was humbling and at the same time very encouraging when I came in third.
Yeah. Yeah. How did that feel? I mean, you beat out Mike Christian. You beat out Barry DeMay. You beat out Robbie, who was probably a guy you looked up to when you were growing up.
Yeah. Well, again, it was just it was just a very, very humbling, and I felt, you know, just so much respect for these guys, you know, and I know, listen, John, I know that on any given day, those guys are all so good.
Yeah.
And this is something that's lost on a lot of the fans and even on the bodybuilders nowadays. Oh, I won because I worked harder than everybody else. Listen, okay, there's genetics.
Yeah.
Okay, there's hard work. Okay, there's diet, there's nutrition, and guess what? There's peaking.
Yeah.
You know, which the last couple of days with water balance and that
right.
type of thing.
Right.
On any given day, these guys are so good that it's just a few points that separate people, you know, one way or the other.
Yeah.
And here's the other part. It's objective. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's not
subjective.
Objective. It's
yeah.
subjective.
Yeah.
Okay. So in other words, it's not who crosses the finish line first. It is subjective. It's the opinion of a judging panel. Change the judging panel,
right.
change the results.
Right.
I'm complaining about the judging panel because that same judging panel had me top four for 7 consecutive years.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
the point that I'm trying to make, you know, is that, you know, when you say who's the greatest of all time, that's like saying who's the greatest baseball player of all time or
yeah.
who's the greatest football player of all time. There's many.
Yeah.
Greatest.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Leo, let me ask you about your opinion on bodybuilding, because now you're in the pros. You're not in competing in weight classes anymore, so you're competing against these monsters. Like, and although it wasn't as much of a size game back then as it is now, but you were up against Lee Haney. You were up against Rich Gaspari, who was a big guy. So you stuck to your guns, and I think very similar to the way Frank Zane had his philosophy and Bob Paris, you know, you decided to develop your physique along the lines of an aesthetic physique, shapely physique. And I remember you did this one interview where you said your body can only hold so much mass before you ruin the symmetry and the beauty of the physique. And if you keep developing that mass without regards to that, and you always had a mindset of that where you were developing your physique slowly and to where it looked good for your frame.
That's exactly right. I think that's lost on guys. But I'll tell you an example that many of you will be able to relate to. If you ever see some of these pictures that are posted nowadays on Instagram where they've actually taken Photoshop
mm-hmm.
and they've actually like morphed and made, you know, ginormous thighs or ginormous arms, you know, and on one of the top bodybuilders. And you realize that it's grotesque.
Yeah, it doesn't look better.
It doesn't look good.
Right.
You know, sometimes more is not better. Sometimes more is just more.
Yeah.
You know, and it actually ruins the natural lines, the way that your eye looks at a physique, and you know, there's a lot to that, you know, and it has to do with proportions, you know, that are set in nature. And once you go past that point, you know, it's like you can't put your finger on it. It's hard to quantify, but it just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't look aesthetic. It doesn't look pretty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you know, and I understand that bodybuilding is about putting muscle on. You know, but it's not just about putting muscle on. If it was, it would be called mass building,
yeah.
not bodybuilding.
Yeah.
If you're building a body has many more aspects than just mass, symmetry, proportion, muscularity, the way, you know, the things are put together, the skeletal structure,
mm-hmm.
you know, the insertions. There's a lot to bodybuilding.
Yeah. Well, credit to you that you stuck with that and you did that, because I would think someone in your position, you're in the Mr. Olympia, you're a top professional bodybuilder, you're on magazine covers, and the emphasis or the pressure has to be on you. You got to get bigger. You got to get bigger. But
yeah.
you did.
And,
you stuck with
and,
that.
You know, John, thank you for that. You know, I think as time went on, the judges didn't know what to do with me. You know, because here, you know, here I am, an apple in a sea of oranges. You
mm-hmm.
know, so to speak. You know, because I was different than everybody else, and I wasn't playing the size game. You know, so you know, it's one of those things where, you know, they have to make a call, you know, as to what type of physique they prefer.
Yeah, yeah. But also credit to the judges back then, because they did seem to award that. Like, they gave top placings to someone like McAway or Zane before him. Or
sure.
Yourself, you know.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So
we go to 88, Lee, and that was the year that Mr. Olympia was in Los Angeles for the first time in California. So yep. That had to be pretty exciting. You were living in Los Angeles at the time, right?
I was living in Los Angeles at the time. And I would say that that particular year, you know, it's obviously you learn many things along the way. And that year I over-dieted. I literally cut my diet down to 1,200 calories. I ended up coming in smooth and small. And it wasn't until like a couple weeks later on the Grand Prix circuit that I actually filled out.
Okay. Wow, 1,200 calories? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you still, you gave a great routine that night, and you still took fourth. I mean, you posed to the Running Man song, right, from Arnold's movie?
That's right. You got a very good memory. Yes,
yeah.
And posed to that. And very exciting show. You know, that was what I call the golden age of bodybuilding. And
yeah.
At that time, it was a huge interest from the general public. And a lot of movie stars had actually shown up for the Mr. Olympia that year, were in the first few rows.
Oh, really?
It was very interesting, yeah.
What movie stars were there? I didn't know that.
Oh, you know, guys like Gregory Hines and, you know, and Arnold and guys like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember Gregory Hines was a big fan of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that Grand Prix circuit afterwards, Lee. So you went over to Europe, and a lot of the fans today may not remember this, but after the Mr. Olympia, there would be like a 2 or 3 week circuit of all the European cities. And you guys would compete several times in 1 week, right? And you'd be traveling.
Actually, it was about once a week for a period of 7 weeks that we had 7 Grand Prix.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you and Gaspari battled it out. I think you took third place in your first one, but then after that you were winning shows. You won the England, or no. Yeah, you won the England, Greece, and Spain shows, right?
Yeah, so I think that Rich won. I want to say that Rich won the first 4, and I won the last 3. I can't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, but 88 was the first time that I beat Rich, and it was the last idea that we made as well.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah, Rich looked a little leaner that year, right? He came down in weight, which a lot of guys did, I think, for the 88 Olympia. I remember. That's one of my favorite Olympias because it seemed like everybody in that show, or almost everybody, was in great shape. Because they were playing their own game. They weren't trying to chase Haney with the size. They were coming in really good condition.
Well, I think a lot of the bodybuilders back then knew that the condition was very important. You know, and we were arguably what you call classic bodybuilders.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't just about size. You know, and I think that there were some limitations on size as well back then because of the training methods. You know, nowadays... you know, there's factors that are, you know, so much more refined, and the nutrition is a lot better. We know so much more about nutrition and supplementation and training, and, you know, the machines are better. And so I think, and also the genetic pool is bigger. There's more people getting involved.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
I think there were some limitations on size thing back then. You know, nowadays it's like everybody's as big as Lee Haney was back then.
Yeah, for sure. And I remember everybody was following a low-fat diet back then, right? More carbohydrates,
yeah.
And very low fat.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. You know, as years have gone on, I've actually cut back on carbohydrates, especially simple carbohydrates, and increased my essential fats.
Right.
I don't go on a keto diet or follow a keto diet or a high-fat diet by any stretch of the imagination. I eat plenty of complex carbohydrates. I'm just saying that not to the extreme that we did back in the 80s.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go over to 89 then. And this was your big year. And that's another one of my favorite Olympias. And I thought you were one of the highlights of that show, Lee, because you had an outstanding posing routine. I remember you posed to 2 different songs together. And it had to be like a 4-minute routine. And it was flawless. And it was, I think, also probably one of your best conditions for a show. Because you really seemed to hit your peak. You were full, but you were very ripped also.
Thank you for that. Yeah, 89, really was a great year. And that was the first year that I took second place. And, you know, and so I had beaten everyone except Haney at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, so you had Vince Taylor going in it. What did you think of him? Because he was the winner last of the year before the Nationals, so he was having a good pro debut year.
Vince Taylor, always had a great physique.
Yeah.
And a very symmetrical, beautiful physique. You could never count him out.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I just tried to focus on being the best that I could be and just blocking out everybody else. You know, the chips fall where they may.
Yeah.
Know, because at the end of the day, it's up to the championship.
Yeah. So when you were creating that routine, Lee, did you feel like you had a good shot at defeating Haney? Because I think, like back then, and maybe even today, if you want to beat Mr. Olympia, you got to have an A game on all aspects. You know, not just your physique, right. Not just your conditioning, but also with your posing. And I think you really brought it that year with your posing. I mean, I think your routine that year is still, as I said, it's regarded as one of the best routines ever, I think.
Thank you very much. I worked very hard on that routine. I think that was what people call the Matador routine.
Mm-hmm.
And if memory serves me correctly, I think that would have been a year. And that particular year, I actually worked with a couple of Spanish choreographers.
Oh, really?
When I was in Madrid on that bullfighting piece of it. And they gave me some really neat ideas. I love the music, you know, because it's a Spanish piece. And, of course, I've got a Spanish heritage, and so I decided to bring that together. John, I worked very, very hard on that routine.
Yeah. You know,
and it was always a passion of mine to try to innovate whenever I did my posing routines and to try to bring something new and exciting and fresh to the audience, you know, instead of the same old boring mandatory poses and that type of thing. Because that's where I think that the physique becomes art, is during a poser routine, especially a well-constructed poser routine like that.
Yeah.
And I always knew that I had to have all of the details, because I wasn't going to beat the other guys on size. Mm-hmm. You know, at 185 or 190 pounds, I was always given away a 40 to 50 pound advantage.
Yeah.
Sometimes more than 50 pounds.
Yeah.
And I knew that I had to have perfect conditioning, perfect skin color, perfect poise, perfect posing. You know, I had to check all the boxes. You know, otherwise I would get lost in the shelf.
Yeah.
You know, so I always knew that was important, and I always put a lot of effort into it.
Yeah. And who would have known that back then in the 80s that the internet would come along, computers would come along, and that routine would live for history, you know, live on forever, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, what's amazing, John, is how many of the younger bodybuilders have reached out to me commented on that particular post routine that particular year, asking me about the music. And in fact, so much so that I ended up putting together a video series called Posing with My Pro.
Oh, really?
Nine part series. It's free. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on LeeLeBronHorosic.com. It's a very well made production that teaches someone who's a beginner how to put together not only their mandatory poses but their freestyle posing, and contains this collects a lot of the tips and tricks that I developed over the years.
Okay. How did you feel about losing to Haney that year? Because I know Haney was a little off. I think that was the heaviest he ever was. I think he was over 250 pounds. And a lot of people thought that you should have beat him.
You know, at the end of the day, Lee Haney arguably is the greatest bodybuilder of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mr. Olympia wins, you know, he can claim that, right?
Yeah.
Regardless of how I felt, he was clear. And, I had a huge response from the Italian crowd in Rimini that year.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that I was definitely one of the crowd favorites, let's say.
Yeah. And then after that, at the Grand Prix Circuit, you cleaned up at that, right? You won all the shows there.
Yes, I won all three of those. After in 89, I won all three of those. Set it up for the next year. That was the first year that I realized, I'm this close to Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
You know, what stood between me and Mr. Olympia is Lee Haney.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of people.
Right. Yeah, so that had to be exciting going into 1990 then, because you had to feel like this could be your year. You were taking second place, and you said next year is going to be my year, right?
I wouldn't say I've shown 1990 convinced that I could win. I had no doubt in my mind that I could win that show if I came in addition. And it came up real close. In fact, I'll tell you, and a lot of people don't know this, but you can go back and you can check the score sheets. I was the only man ever to lead any coming out of a prejudging going into another show. So coming out of that prejudging, I was leading Lee Haney. And then I lost it at the next show.
Wow. Mm-hmm. How do you explain that, Lee? How did you lose it? Because your posing is always great.
You gotta write that one off to history. And listen, Lee Haney is still the greatest bodybuilder of the 80s.
Yeah.
I felt that night that I could have won that show, and I don't think anybody would have complained about it. Mm-hmm. I had a number of the other bodybuilders come up to me, congratulating me before I even walked out on stage.
Oh, really?
And I think he had one show. And so I was pretty disappointed, but it is what it is. It is what it is. And you have to respect the end results. You have to respect the judging. And not taking anything away from Lee Haney, because he's the greatest up there.
Yeah, yeah. And then that was the year they did the drug testing, and they announced that at the beginning of the year that they were going to do drug testing at the Arnold Classic and the Olympia, and I think they also did it at all the top national level shows like the NPC Nationals in the USA and the North America. And I remember when they did interviews at one of the Mr. Olympias, I think it was in 87, and they were asking the competitors about that. And you were actually in favor of that. You thought it would be a good move for the sport.
It was important for me because Pepsic wasn't dependent on a lot of anabolic steroid usage. I'm not denying that existed in that era. We all partook of that, okay? It was legal at the time, and then became not legal later, and it's all done with doctor supervision and whatnot. I was never dependent on that, and my weight never fluctuated that much. In fact, here as I sit today, I'm 175 pounds, which is the same weight that I won the NPC Nationals at.
Yeah, amazing.
33 years ago.
Right.
So I wasn't worried about that. In fact, I thought it was great. If they could stick with the drug testing going forward, that would be great for me personally.
Yeah.
And I think that the sport would have taken a different turn. Now I will tell you that I do agree, with the opinion that it's so hard to test for those things.
Yeah.
And that athletes, it's human nature, are always finding ways around it. Mm-hmm. So is there any true drug testing anyway? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think on one side you could argue that it would mitigate the drug use to have testing. On the other side, you say no, they would turn to things that are maybe even more toxic or worse to try to circumvent the testing,
Right.
So again, that's one of those ethical dilemmas that I think, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. We did have the testing that year. The physiques were a little off. I think had they kept the testing, that eventually the pros would have learned how to peak without, and the physiques would have gotten harder again, but the physiques would have stayed smaller.
Yeah.
And I think that we would not have ushered in the era of the big bellies and the huge emphasis on mass to the exclusion of all other factors.
Right, right. Yeah, I talked to Peter McGuff and Sean Ray, and they both had similar views. They, Peter said that if they would have stayed with it, he thinks the bodybuilders would have adjusted. And Sean said the same thing you did about how they all turned bigger after that. And that might have avoided it if the drug testing would have stayed, relevant.
Yeah. Listen, after Lee Haney, the sport took a hard turn towards rewarding mass.
Right.
Okay. So Lee Haney's era was the last of the classic bodybuilding era.
Right, exactly. And another thing you mentioned, I remember when they were talking about that, and you said something very relevant or very correct, in my opinion, was the sponsorship opportunities for bodybuilding would have increased if they would have went that drug-free route. And I know some bodybuilders are like, well, this is a niche sport, but you said, yeah, but you're going to lose a lot of opportunities that way.
It is. It's still a niche sport. You know, men's pro bodybuilding is a niche sport.
Yeah.
Okay. There's not. There's probably less people now that want to look like that, and that's okay. That's okay. It is what it is. You know. Not everybody drives a dragster down the street. A dragster's capable of doing 300 miles per hour.
Yeah.
But it's not practical for everyday driving. You know. So I get that. You know, and I respect the work that goes into that and whatnot. But that's decidedly a different standard, than we had in the day, you know. And I don't think that it's been good for the sport of bodybuilding or the popularity of it. Yeah. I think that that's the reason that the other categories of physique competition, like the classic bodybuilding and the men's physique competitions, right, have exploded.
Yep.
At least that's my observation. On a state and national level, you're seeing a lot more of those type of competitors and less men's open competitors because
Definitely.
Of that.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Lee.
Yeah.
Getting back to your contest career here, Lee, 1991 was Lee Haney's last year. That was in Orlando, Florida. And Dorian, that was his first year competing in the Olympia, and he took second. So
yes.
You dropped down to fourth from second. Haney was first, Dorian was second, and then Vince Taylor came in really great shape that year, and he took third.
Correct. Yeah, and so I was off that year, and I feel that I deserved my fourth place. I felt that the way that the chips fell first through fourth were very accurate.
Yeah.
Lee Haney exited the reigning champion. He was much harder and improved in 91 and exited at the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never saw Dorian Yates beating Lee Haney.
Really? Okay. Yeah. What did you think of Dorian competing in his first Olympia?
Oh, I think he came in good condition.
Yeah.
I think he came in good condition. I think that it was interesting to see Haney and him posing side by side. But I think that Haney won that hands down.
Yeah. Were you feeling pressure on yourself, Lee, going into it after taking second 2 years in a row in 89 and 90?
Yes, you do feel some pressure going into that show. Always, because so much of the line, you train for it, for an entire year.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's par for the course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, in 92, it was in Finland, and that was Dorian's first Olympia win, and you took third place behind Dorian and Kevin. But I thought in 92 your physique was markedly improved. I remember after seeing the pictures and the video of that contest, you were much thicker and bigger than I think I've ever seen you. And I remember we did an interview years ago, and you said you were focusing on winning the Olympia for a couple years when it was just that pressure of winning. And then after 91, I think you said, okay, now I'm going to focus on just improving my physique instead of just trying to win the Olympia.
Yes, absolutely. And at that point, it became a more intrinsic goal, and internalized goal.
Okay.
Where my goal was to become the best Lee Rada that I could be and then put it out there in front of the judges. You know, as compared to the way that I used to externalize the goal, meaning, okay, well, I'm focus on just winning the Mr. Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now I realize that you have to improve yourself in order to win the Mr. Olympia. So I was focusing on an external goal versus an internal goal, which is to be the best me that was possible. And I felt that was, I kept improving that I had a chance of winning.
Yeah. You
know, so that was the goal. John, remember early on in the interview when I told you that is subjective, right? And bodybuilding competition is subjective. Judging is subjective. So case in point, just a mere 1 week later, I competed in the Pro World Championships. Dorian had fallen out, but
you beat Kevin.
Kevin Leverone was there,
and
the results were different this time.
Yeah,
I came in, and he came in second.
Right.
So it just goes to show you that again, it's a subjective sport.
Yeah.
In 92, I thought I could beat Dorian.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
What did you do with your training and your nutrition that year to improve so much, Lee?
So what I did with the training and nutrition that year, I actually started using, you're gonna find this kind of funny, but the protein powders had improved so much that I actually started using some of the whey protein powders and stuff like that in training. And I felt that by increasing my protein intake and also by using a protein powder, which arguably has the smallest particle size and so hence comes in contact with the most digestive fluids and you get more assimilation of that type of thing. Mm. You know, I ended up putting on like a good 4 or 5 pounds that year.
Wow.
You know, so, yeah, it was my heaviest competition weight, which was 193 pounds.
193, okay. Yeah, I wanted to ask you what you weighed for that because I could see the difference. I could see the difference in your physique from the years before that, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. So you did one more Olympia, and that was the next year. But before you did that, you went into the Pro Ironman, and you went into the Arnold Classic, and you came up against Flex Wheeler, who was the new guy. He had won the USA the year before, and Flex had a phenomenal physique. I mean, what a great pro debut he had, huh?
That's another one that I think should have won a Mr. Olympia contest.
Yeah.
You know, beautiful physique, beautiful lines, you know, plenty of muscle size and muscularity. It still befuddles me how he didn't win a Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was the new kid on the block, and he was sensational.
Yeah.
You know, and I was the crystal veteran by that point, you know, and ready to step off when he was ready to step on, you know.
Yeah.
We actually ended up having a lot of fun competing together, he was very, very respectful, you know, and we had a lot of respect and admiration for each other, and we still do.
Yeah, I think that might have been one of his best years ever, too. I mean, when he first became pro, I mean, his physique was phenomenal, because that was before he got much bigger, and he had that refinement, and he had that really good aesthetics in his physique.
Yeah, great physique. Yeah, great physique, small joints, almost cartoonish.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how long and big the muscle bellies were and how small the joints were. You know, just very, very gifted genetically.
Yeah. And Paul Gillette was in that show, too, and he was another freak.
Yeah, Paul, I like Paul. He's a great guy. But, you know, Paul is one of those guys that that had one of the big, monstrous, massive type physiques.
Yeah.
So I think that's a totally different physique than Flex Wheeler.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember you said after that show that, you know, the new breed of bodybuilders was coming in, and you could see that, like you said, the genetic pool was definitely increasing because you got guys like Flex and Paul Gillette, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, by the time 95 rolled around, I felt that the sport had outgrown me. Mm-hmm. Literally,
yeah,
and I had outgrown the sport on a personal level. I felt like I was climbing Mount Everest, letting the rope back down, and then climbing it again. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Been there, done it, ready to get on with a different chapter of my life.
Yeah, and one thing I remember about '93 too, the Arnold Classic was on television that year, and they had they showed your wife Robin with Hunter in the sidelines. You were watching him on stage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great feeling. I still have that clip.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's hard to believe that kid, you know, that little two-year-old boy is now 26 years old,
right.
Weighs 260 pounds, and is barreling towards an NPC Nationals win this year, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was great to see that, seeing that the man he's become now. That was amazing.
Yeah, it's really very rewarding for me as a father. I'm very proud of him, in case you can't tell.
Yeah, you should be.
You know, to it's almost like watching history repeat itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's been just incredible. You know, it's like a second bite of the apple, really, John. And I'm getting to watch it all over again. You know, and even though he very much has his own training techniques and is very scientific in his approach with mm-hmm. the training and the diet and the supplementation, everything. I'm still in the wings. I work with him on the posing. I'm there on the day of the show. Hey, Dad, look at me. What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we got to do this. We got to do that. You know. And so it's like going through it again myself. You know.
Yeah.
It's
funny. I don't know who's more nervous on a day of the show, me or him.
Yeah. And it is cool to see some of these bodybuilders' sons. Like you got Zane Watson, who was Mike Watson's son from Canada. And you got, of course, Sergio Jr. is coming up, and then your son's coming up.
Yeah, so. And let me tell you, Sergio has an incredible physique.
Yeah,
I see that young man winning a Mr. Olympia one day.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. He's very good.
Yeah, it's exciting, the second generation. Yeah. So were you disappointed when you lost to Flex that year? I mean, Flex was a phenomenal bodybuilder, but you were coming in basically the same shape that you did at the Olympia the year before when you were so much improved. And you would think, a guy who's taken second at the Olympia several times, you were going to win that Ironman and win the Arnold.
Hey, listen, John, nobody's ever happy except the person who takes first place.
Right.
That's the long and short of it. But I'll stick to my guns and I'll say it's subjective. I felt that I could have won in 93.
Yeah.
And, but that's not the way that it worked out. And certainly, Flex is no slouch. He is a great bodybuilder. And
great. For sure. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think either one of you guys could have won that year. So you go to the Olympia that year was in Atlanta, Georgia, and that was Dorian's second win. And that was the year he really morphed into a whole new bodybuilder. I think he gained like 15 pounds, and he was 257 pounds on stage. And Flex was second, and Sean was third, and then you were right behind him in fourth. How did you feel about your placing in that? How did you feel about that Olympia in general?
You know, I knew that by that time that it was time for me to retire.
Yeah.
Because the direction that the sport was going, it took a hard turn in the direction of mass over everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just knew that it was my curtain call.
Yeah, yeah. How did you feel about that, Lee?
It was okay. I mean, at the end of the day, it's subjective, and if that's a direction that the bodybuilding powers wanted to take it. That's the direction that the judges wanted to take it. That's what they wanted to reward. That's great.
Yeah.
And listen, at the end of the day, everybody has a different opinion about what comprises the ideal bodybuilding physique.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's why there's all different types of builds. Some people prefer a more massive bodybuilder. I mean, my son's a more massive bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Others prefer a more classic build. But again, it's subjective. It's a matter of opinion as to what constitutes the ideal physique. Do you have to have muscle? Absolutely. Do you have to have mass? You have to have some size, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but not mass building. It's bodybuilding.
Yeah.
That's not true. That we have to keep symmetry, we have to keep proportion, we have to keep definition, we have to keep lines, and it has to be beautiful to the eye.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't have said it better. So after that Olympia, you took a year off in 94. You didn't compete at all, which was, I think, the first time you did that in your pro career. And then
I took a year off, John. I was feeling burned out.
Yeah.
By that, I think that my subconscious was telling me it's time. And then I turned around and I made another run at it in 95.
Yeah, you did the Arnold.
Yeah, that was the Ironman and the Arnold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you feel about that Arnold? I thought you looked great. I was at that show. That's the one Mike Francois won, but I thought you looked phenomenal.
Well, Mike was in amazing condition.
Yeah, he was.
Did a great job. I think he was a deserving winner. And, I by that time, I almost felt like I was in a state of just stepping outside my body and just watching it happen.
Yeah.
It's almost like I was a cosmic observer. Okay, this is going on. This is me.
Yeah.
Okay, is this something that I want to keep doing? And the answer was no.
Right.
I think I could have competed a few more years and I was still been a top five finisher.
Yeah.
But I was just ready. I think I had mentally already moved on to the next stage of my life.
Yeah. And I think you were right. I think you did see the change in the sport and it was changing. And I think you got out at the right time because, the guys that were ahead of you at that show, like Charles Claremont was a great bodybuilder and Andreas Munzer, I don't think those guys would have beaten you before, and now the judges were putting those guys ahead of you, so they were seeing the change in their judging procedures or their standards were changing,
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah. And you didn't really announce your retirement, did you, Lee?
No, I didn't announce my retirement. I actually asked, and I could be official if it would be possible for me to go to the mic. And this is a 1995 Arnold Classic, and go to the mic and announce my retirement. And they asked Jim Lorimer, the contest promoter, if that would be okay, and he denied the request.
Oh, really?
So I didn't go to the mic, and I did not announce my retirement. I did it later in the magazines.
Okay, all right. They would have been all over that today. They're always looking for drama on stage now, you know?
Yeah.
All right, well, Lee, let me ask you what you think was your most memorable show, and it could be all the way up to your amateur days. I mean, what was the one that really made you feel the best?
The wins that stand out in my mind the most are the ITV Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
I knew at that point that I had reached the peak of amateur bodybuilding. I was ITV Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
And you know, what's funny, John, is that there are more people that recognize the title Mr. Universe than recognize the title Mr. Olympia.
I know.
If you are talking about a cross section of the lay public. I'm not talking about bodybuilding. Obviously, the Mr. Olympia is a Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, I'm saying in terms of public recognition of titles. And so that was a big one for me, and that's the one in which I got my pro card. So that was a great one. And another really great one that stands out in my mind is the 1982 Pro World Cup, which was the week after the Olympia, because that was in Spain. Mm-hmm. And so the Spanish crowd just went wild, you know, just went crazy.
Yeah.
And every time that I would pull that out of the line to come up to the pre-judging, they would stand to their feet and they'd be screaming so loud that the judges were turning around and I was having a room and just
wow.
Laying them down. You know, so it was just a great feeling. And when I won that show, my parents were there. My dad was still alive.
Oh, wow. And that's great.
They got to watch that fever pitch of the crowd winning on the soil of my ancestors.
Yeah.
And Hunter had just been born, and I had Hunter with me. And of course, you know, we did the prerequisite Lion King thing.
I brought him up on stage.
I remember my wife handing him to me. And my hands were oily, and she goes, "Don't dry." So the first time that Hunter stepped on a pro stage was at the tender age of 4 months.
Wow, that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah. Much the same way that Sergio did with his
Yeah, family. I was just going to mention, that's the same thing that happened with Sergio and his dad, yeah.
Yeah. Good memory.
Yeah.
Those are probably the two that stand out in my mind the most.
Okay.
Yeah. Listen, at the end of the day, it was a great journey. You know, I thank God that He blessed me with the great genetics that He blessed me with, and the great opportunities and all the doors that He opened for me, and I just give Him all the glory for that. It's just been a very blessed life.
Yeah. Well, it was a fantastic career, Lee, and you were an amazing bodybuilder, and I think you're a real legend in the sport. And so congratulations on such a great career. Congratulations on doing such amazing posing routines that I said will live on throughout history. And also, you know, you advertise yourself as Mass with Class, and I think you've lived your life like that, too. You're a great businessman. You're a great husband. You have a great family. Like you said, you're celebrating your anniversary next week, and you've got a great son. So congratulations on just an amazing career, amazing journey for us to watch.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate that.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Lee, and I know you're busy, so I appreciate your time, and I really do appreciate you spending time with the Bodybuilding Legends Show.
And I appreciate you, and I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care, Lee.
Take care.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. I want to again thank Lee Labrada for taking some time out of his busy schedule to talk to us. I want to thank our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. And as I mentioned, I do have that big book sale going on. All three of my books are available for only $50, and that includes postage and handling in the United States. So just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. We will see you guys next week for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Take care.